San Diego is our community. You live here, you're connected to it. So are we. You're listening to Community Connection.
I'm Cliff Albert. Getting through an emergency situation can be very traumatic. We've all maybe been there, maybe you haven't, but maybe one day you will. Whether it's a death, a crime, or some other situation, you could be confused, in shock even, and in need of emotional support. Well, that's where TIP San Diego comes in. T-I-P, TIP, which stands for Trauma Intervention Program, a volunteer-based program here in San Diego that offers emotional and practical support in times of need. The volunteers called out by a member of law enforcement to the scene of an emergency situation to basically provide emotional first aid. Joining us on the program Community Connection today to talk about it is the executive director of TIP, TIP San Diego, Shay Gebler, along with a couple of the volunteers, the people on the front line, Cher DeWeese and Linda Lohr. All of you, thanks and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
So, Shay, let's start with you. First of all, just give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of what the program is all about.
So imagine you wake up in the morning next to your spouse of 45 years and find them cold to the touch. What are you going to do? 911 comes, the paramedics arrive, and unfortunately they're unable to save your loved one. What TIP volunteers do is arrive to be the emotional support and the practical support to that person who has just lost their loved one. So we can help with explaining the emergency system to them, the process that they just experienced, and then help them with mortuary arrangements or whatever the next steps in that traumatic event may be.
And this would include more violent kind of things that occur? Do you report the scenes of crimes and things like that?
Absolutely. We are citizens helping citizens in crisis, and so we respond to a variety of scenes. It may be an unexpected death of an elderly person, sudden infant death syndrome of a baby. We've responded to larger scale incidents that include school shootings, high profile suicides in the community, large incident events, as well as intimate small cases in people's homes.
Well, certainly something people are listening right now, something nobody wants to have to go through, but obviously it's a part of life. And so how did the program get started? How long has it been around?
Great question. So the program's been around here in San Diego for 30 years. And the way that TIP came about was Oceanside Police Department was working with County Mental Health, and they identified that there was a need in the community. People were becoming angry at the system. They were angry at police officers and the fire department. You know, why did you leave my loved one on the ground? Why are you leaving me alone in this time of crisis? And unfortunately, the reality is the police department and the fire department are busy. They have other calls to respond to. So Oceanside Police partnered with our founder, Wayne Fortin, who was working for County Mental Health at the time, and created this program. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of pushback. You know, are you really going to have citizen volunteers responding to our crime scenes or our police scenes and really not going to get in the way? And they are going to provide this high level of support. And sure enough, we're here 30 years later and busier than ever.
I bet. We're going to get into more about that. But I want to talk with our volunteers who are here today, Cher and Linda. The thought of going to these kind of, get yourself involved in these kind of situations with people obviously in a very difficult time. What made each of you want to get involved in this? Linda?
I became involved because of a personal situation that I had. My daughter got a call one night that her father had been found dead in his apartment. So we drove there, and of course we were kept outside the condo because situations like that are considered a crime scene until they're released. And it was cold, and this woman suddenly appeared at our side, and she said, "I'm going to get you inside the apartment. I'll find a way to do that." And the next thing we knew, we were inside the apartment, and I said, "What do we do now? What happens next?" And she was there with information to tell us, you call a mortuary, you choose a mortuary, and she figured out what the steps were that we were supposed to take. Of course, this was the first time we had ever experienced anything like that. And I said, "Who are you and where did you come from?" And she was a volunteer.
And how long after that did you decide to become one yourself?
Well, I had to do a little tracking because I lived in North County, and this happened in San Diego. So I finally traced it back to I should be in touch with TIP in North County. So it was about a year.
We're going to talk more about what you've experienced since that point. But, Cher, how did you get involved and why?
I actually read a newspaper article in the community section about TIP and thought, wow, that's interesting. That's something that's right up my alley, something I could do, being with people in those types of situations. But at the time, I wasn't able to commit to the training that's required.
How did you know it was right up your alley? Because it's the kind of job that some people might say, oof, boy, I never want to have to deal with that.
You know, I think I'm just a people person. And I think being around people, helping them through difficult situations, whatever those may be, it's just my thing. People come to me with those types of situations, sometimes just problems or concerns in their lives. So it's just a natural thing for me, I believe.
So you read the story and got to thinking about it more?
Right, got to thinking about it. Couldn't do the training. 2 years later, I saw another article about it, and the training fit perfectly into this window of time that I had available. So I took the training and never looked back. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that training, Shay, because people listening to this maybe are thinking, well, if I were ever in that situation, I just don't want anybody showing up. I want to make sure that they can really help me because I won't be in any position at that point to kind of be discriminate about who I'm talking to, maybe. How much training is involved? How does it work?
A lot of training is involved, and I do want to just reiterate, being a TIP volunteer is not for everybody. You know, it is a high crisis, high stress volunteer opportunity. However, we take people from all different backgrounds to be volunteers. You don't necessarily have to have a social worker or a counseling background to be a TIP volunteer. We're looking for people with real life skills, common sense. But of course, we need people that are skilled and trained to be trusted in these residences and, you know, in residences of people going through a traumatic event. So our TIP volunteer training is about 60 hours. With a 3-month field training process after that. So we are screening people in and out. Not everyone can be a volunteer. Extensive background check, reference check. And because of the nature of the work we do, we partner very closely with the police and fire departments and the sheriff department. So you you have to be squeaky clean and be able to pass this training academy with flying colors in order to be considered to be a volunteer.
All right. And what kind of specific qualities are you looking for in terms of just being able to get along with people? I mean, what kind of things that you need to be like, or what do you look at? And what maybe disqualifies? Maybe if somebody's listening right now, well, I kind of like to do that. Maybe there's something that doesn't make them well-equipped or something.
Sure. The biggest thing we're looking for is people that are compassionate, someone that's willing to be called out in the middle of the night to help this person who's experiencing a traumatic event. So if you're a compassionate citizen, we're definitely interested in talking to you. Things that may disqualify you, criminal background check, and then, you know, being able to work closely with the emergency response system, so not having an axe to grind, but also understanding that there are some times that you are going to have challenges with the emergency response system because of the nature of the work that we're doing and advocating for your client and not understanding the whole totality of an investigation. So there's, you know, as long as you have a compassionate heart and you are able to have some common sense, that's a big thing on our emergency scenes. And of course, not everyone has that.
And willing to commit to it, obviously. And Cher, you had said that you have to be able to, you know, invest the hours that you need to invest. But what Shay said about this training, all of us have probably been in some sort of emergency situation where we know the heart rate goes up. You start even shaking. You get very unable to maybe to think straight. How did you each discover or learn how to stay so calm and helpful in those situations? Cher?
Well, our training is phenomenal. And we tell our trainees in the academy that trust the training. It will kick in. You will be able to do this when you get on scene. And one of the things, one of the main things we're taught is we dance the dance with our clients, meaning if their level is high, we need to meet them at their level to help bring them down.
Yeah, I guess the worst thing for somebody who's in a panic state to hear from somebody is, oh, you know, just calm down and it's
right.
Not a big deal. Just relax.
True. But there are certain things we don't say. Mm-hmm. We don't say calm down. Mm-hmm. We don't say stop crying. Mm-hmm. We don't say get over this.
Right.
You know, you'll be okay. Just calm down and let's figure this out. So we're taught what to say. We're taught what not to say because oftentimes saying the wrong thing can cause another trauma. to an already traumatic situation.
So it's a very specific kind of training. It's Linda, what do you remember about the training that you went through? Did you go into it thinking, I don't know how I'm going to be able to deal with this in every situation?
I did. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest things is you have to be able to listen. You so badly want to be able to say, I know what you're talking about. Oh, I've been there. I understand. But you really don't. You have no idea what they're going through on their level. So you just have to be able to listen and sit quietly, hold their hand. And to me, that is one of the biggest things that I remember.
Well, that's good advice for any kind of relationship situation. But let me ask you, your first time that you went out, do you remember that first time, Linda?
I do. I do remember. For me, it was frightening because it was a Spanish-speaking home, and I do not speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. But amazingly, we got through it. And I really feel I was able to help the survivors. We have information that is printed in Spanish, so I was able to give that information to the family so they could make the final arrangements.
Cher, what was your first experience like?
You know, they say that we go and we're called to go on the calls that we're meant to be on. And so often that turns out to be true. My first call was a young man who had lost his mother to an accidental drug overdose. And he was about the age of my children. So I could really sort of relate to him, and maternal instincts kicked in just a bit. I was terrified, actually, to go on that first call. But truly, our training really does kick in. And oftentimes, whether it's a language barrier, whether it's a client who doesn't want to talk, they just want to sit there. And so we may really sit there for 2 hours and really not say much. But our presence has such a phenomenal effect on them, just being there, as Linda said, being there with them, holding their hand, helping them through that process through those first few hours of the event. Can really make a difference in their lives and how they handle it.
You know, it's great that you're both willing to share what your experiences were, because I know there are people probably listening now. That sounds like it would really be a helpful thing to do, but I'm not sure I could get through it. I'm not sure I could do it. What, I mean, you can tell people out there, don't worry. I mean, you can get through this. Is that your message?
Well, as Shay said, it's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that everyone can be a good tip volunteer. We have ways to manage how we handle the calls. We debrief with our crisis team manager after our call. So if we have concerns, if we're struggling with that call, whether it's something we did or said or didn't do or didn't say, or just the call itself, if it really affects us, we have others within our organization that we can talk with to help us through that.
Have you ever had a case, either of you, that you've said, oh, you know, I'm not sure I did this right. I'm not sure if I forgot something or I didn't do what I wanted to do. Tell us about one of those.
Absolutely. I think probably on every call I come home and I think I should have said this. I could have done that. But probably in the end, we have done the best we possibly could have. And we do make one call back to our client, and in that call, sometimes we can rectify what we thought we should have done. But most of the time, we have done a good job.
When you each have first shown up at somebody's home or wherever it might be, do you find generally acceptance for your presence, or do people push you away in any way?
More often than not, we're accepted. It's the first responders that call us, the fire departments, police mm-hmm. departments, sheriff, hospitals. They call us, and generally they'll let the client know, I've called for someone to be here with you. So when they introduce us, ordinarily they'll introduce us, they're expecting us, they know a general purpose of why we are there.
Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break on the program, and then we come back, all of you, Shay, and both of you, Linda and Cher. I want to talk about the relationship with police and first responders and how that works, and get more into how people actually can help the organization. You're listening to The Community Connection.
Life after military service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, feeling lost and uncertain about the future. These feelings don't take away from a veteran's strength, courage, or sense of duty. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
People coming together to find solutions. You're listening to Community Connection.
And we're back on the Community Connection program today. Cliff Albert here. Our subject today, TIP, the organization here in San Diego that helps people in a very special way, the Trauma Intervention Program. And with us is the Executive Director, Shay Gebler, along with two of the volunteers, Cher DeWeese and Linda Lohr. And again, before the break, we were talking about your experiences, your personal experiences, Linda and Cher, about what you've been through at the scene of being able to help people. And Shay, you were talking earlier on the program too about what it takes to be a volunteer, and not everybody can do it and not really made to do it. But let me ask you this. I mean, you said earlier that it's the first responder who calls you to the scene. There's a need. And I would imagine that part of the great thing about your organization of the volunteers is that if you're a victim or a family of a victim or in some way of a situation like we've been talking about, you know, police officers, as you said, firefighters, they can appear to be almost uncaring because they're busy doing a job. And you must hear that from people who are in those situations. And that's, I assume you keep the volunteers up to speed on that kind of part of this.
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of very compassionate sheriff's deputies, police officers, firefighters out there. They're all there to do a job and a purpose, though. And as part of their self-care, they need to ensure that they're focused on their duty. They can't allow their emotions to get involved. And so it's become a great partnership because we are part of the 911 dispatch system. The police, fire department, the sheriff's department does call us out through their dispatch system. And so we are part of their team. However, our role is the emotional support. So when we arrive on scene, often we hear from the first responder that has requested us is, "Oh, thank goodness you're here. I'm so glad you're here." And there's different cases that we're on, some where the police department or the sheriff's department does have to stay on scene for the totality of the scene because it's an investigation, but they're happy that we're there to be that shoulder to cry on. So it's not only emotional support for the citizen in crisis, it's emotional support for the first responders as well.
And the police officers and firefighters, whoever might be involved, deputies, they obviously must work with the volunteers at the scene so that you can have access to the people who need access without interfering.
Absolutely. So it's a great working relationship with the first responders and the volunteer. And in fact, the TIP volunteers are so trusted that if the police officer or the first responder does not have to stay on scene and they're called out to another location for another emergency, they will leave the TIP volunteer alone because they consider us a partner in action. They trust us just as much as they trust their other partners.
What kind of commitment is necessary on the part of volunteers to do this?
So the TIP commitment is, of course, completing our training academy, which is about 60 hours, as we said. And then we require that TIP volunteers do 3 12-hour shifts a month. The way that works out is you tell us your availability. Our shifts are from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and then 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And the great part about being a TIP volunteer is when you're on your shift, you go live your life. You're in the vicinity of your response area, which is around your home. And as long as you're ready to go and get out the door within 2 minutes, you know, we have TIP volunteers who work from home so they can leave at any point, or other ones that are, you know, have alternative work schedules that they work around their shifts with. So the 12-hour shifts 3 times a month, and then we have a 3-hour continuing education meeting each month that's required because we want to ensure our volunteers are up to date on everything that's going on in the county, any new information with first responders or on working actually with the medical examiner's office. We want to make sure that we're always doing the right thing with those partner agencies.
You know, with the size of this county and all the agencies involved, you must have a huge team of volunteers.
We've got an incredible team of volunteers, and TIP would not exist without them. We average between about 90 to 110 volunteers at a time, and we're divided into different teams to ensure our response time. The practicality and effectiveness of TIP is a key point in our organization. So we ensure a 20-minute response time to any emergency scene. The immediate response is so important in that healing process for our clients. So TIP volunteers are expected to respond immediately when they're on shift, and we do average, as I said, in the whole county, a 20-minute response time.
That's pretty good, especially when the fact that if you're at the scene involved in something like that, 20 minutes can feel like a long time, but that's pretty fast response. The in terms of just the kind of people, again, who commit to this, and you said that they have to be in the, you assign them in areas, and they have to be available during those 12 hours. Are there only one volunteer goes to each scene, or are there teams of people? How does that work?
It depends on the type of situation. Oftentimes, more often than not, it's one volunteer per scene for the typical calls that we receive. But we have deployed upwards of 40 to 60 volunteers on a scene during the wildfire season, a large incident scale scene, for example, a school shooting that we've been involved in, we'll deploy as many volunteers as we need. I'm trying to think of Kelly school shooting. We probably had about 15 volunteers. And then we're working more closely with school districts. And so that if there is a massive incident at a school site, that we can deploy a bunch of volunteers from all over the county. The response time might not be 20 minutes, but we can promise almost within an hour to have that large incident. But as I said, most of our calls, one or two volunteers per scene. And I did want to highlight that we do have a TIP teen program. We have realized that there's some amazing teenagers out there that bring a great skill set of being a caring and compassionate person. So they go through the same training. And if there's children on a scene, we deploy our TIP teen program because we understand that children who are grieving are going to connect a lot better with a teen than they are maybe someone that's a little more, you know, middle-aged. And so our TIP teen program, we will we'll send them out to our calls as well.
Is it hard to find teen volunteers?
It has been hard to find. And the trouble is we get a couple of great TIP teens and then they end up going off to college. Uh-huh. And so then we lose a lot of them because they're off to school.
But you must get some word out to some of the schools then across the county then.
We do our best to speak to a bunch of different schools, specifically schools that might have a healthcare track, you know, or elective courses in law enforcement, kids that we think are more interested in this kind of support network.
Speaking of law enforcement, I bet you run into cops and firefighters all the time who are so thankful that you exist.
We are. We're very fortunate. So after every call that we go on, we do request feedback from the law enforcement personnel to see how we did. You know, we want to continually evaluate our program and the effectiveness of what the volunteer is doing. And every day we get incoming mail from first responders saying, I don't know what I would have done without you. Not only did you free us to get back into service sooner, it made me feel good that we were helping a citizen in crisis. Or quite frankly, I didn't know what to do when this was happening with this person, and the TIP volunteer was able to help me with this person.
Also with us, of course, on the program, two volunteers, Cher and Linda. I have to ask each of you, what has happened during this time that you've been a volunteer for TIP that has most surprised you? Maybe something that you didn't expect when you first began to get involved with this program. What most surprised you or most unexpected you discovered during this time? Cher?
Oh, good question.
or something that you have really gotten out of it, maybe more than you ever thought you could.
I think knowing this group of volunteers that works with TIP, it has been an amazing experience.
Yeah, I imagine you met a lot of great people.
A lot of great people. And we all share this common bond, which is really a gift. I think what I've learned most out of it from TIP is that death has no barriers, that it affects everybody at every level, whether it's the elderly couple, you know, who the husband has passed away in the middle of the night, or it's the gang-related shooting. That family grieves equally. There is no difference. And that's something that I've really taken away from being a TIP volunteer.
That's something good to remember, I think, for everybody who are listening right now, because somebody might think that that kind of situation will be worse than this kind of situation. But the grieving, as you said, is very similar. Probably.
Right, right. The grieving itself is different, but they all grieve. Mm-hmm. They all have suffered this traumatic loss.
Linda, what about you? What have you most taken away from your time doing this training or something that surprised you? Maybe you didn't even realize.
Well, one thing that Shay mentioned were the first responders and how they do appreciate us. They treat us like royalty. Mm-hmm. They actually find parking spots for us and help us out of our car, which surprised me a bit. The other thing is, I have been on high-profile cases, and they grieve just like anyone else. And they need our support, just as the widow who lives alone or who will be living alone after this. Also, what amazes me is how these people welcome us into their home. And we're there for 2 to 4 hours to basically help them breathe for the next several hours.
It must bring both of you a lot of personal satisfaction when you leave somebody's home or leave the scene of where you have been to see what has happened during that period of time, 2 hours, 4 hours, whatever it might be, and how the people that you've been talking to and helping have changed.
It actually does. It's amazing. From the time we walk in the door, they're basically in shock. And over the next several hours, they gradually come out of it and start to make plans, as difficult as those plans may be.
And what's it like for you afterwards? I'm just picturing in my head, you must be exhausted after those incidents.
It can be. It definitely can be. And of course, every call is different. Because every one of our clients is different. They're handling that situation very differently, which means we handle it very differently. And yes, some calls can be absolutely exhausting. We get back to the car and we let our team leader know that we're done with the call. And sometimes you just sit there and close your eyes for a few minutes just to clear your head. Some calls stay with you longer than others. You know, little things that might haunt you about what you did or didn't do, or how's that client going to be? How are they, you know, a week from now, a month from now, a year from now? So you handle the outcome of it very differently, just depending upon the call.
Well, our listeners right now are probably thinking, I didn't realize this organization existed. I may have even seen some or have some interaction, but didn't realize it. So, Shay, how do people get involved? I mean, these are all volunteers, so they're not being paid. They're all volunteers. Tell us how people can get involved.
There's a variety of ways you can get involved. Of course, being a tip volunteer and responding to calls and taking your shifts and going to help that person, you know, that may be alone otherwise through their tragedy. But if volunteering might not be for you, we have other ways. Donating is always an option. If you're maybe your business does charity drives where they want to highlight an organization, we're always looking for people in the community to partner with. So our tip volunteers, all of their resources, you know, come out of pretty much their own pocket. We have teddy bears that we bring to the scene. If there's children, we bring blankets, because if we're at a scene where a house has burned down and it's in the middle of the night, we want to be able to make sure that our clients are covered and warm. So there's lots of ways we can get involved. They can contact us through our website or by calling our office at any time. We're 24/7.
This is really the organization, as you described it here the last several minutes. I mean, local government couldn't fund something like this. I mean, without all these volunteers, this wouldn't exist, would it?
It wouldn't. We have the support of local government because they realize the value of the hours that these volunteers are giving back and the overtime that it's taking off of the shoulders of their first responders. So just to give you a little example, last year our volunteers provided 96,000 hours of service in San Diego County, which is about 46 full-time employees. And we're doing that on a very small budget. So we definitely have the support of local governments. They are our biggest partner, but we couldn't do it without our volunteers.
No,
as
if
I
you
said.
Had to pay, I mean, if you had to pay all those people, obviously, where would the money come from, obviously?
Absolutely.
So people, yeah, definitely donate to TIP if you're listening
donate
right now. the website is tipsandiego.org. And do you have any fundraising activities that you do through the year? Anything you want to mention?
We do. We have in the past had a Heroes on Scene event where we nominate different heroes that we've come across on different scenes. And we are moving forward for spring of 2017 for our Compassion in Action event. So it's highlighting people that have shown compassion on different tip scenes and having an event for that. But I also want to highlight right now, if you're interested in supporting us at this point, we do have an Adopt a Tip Volunteer campaign going on our website. So you can view the profiles of who our tip volunteers are, you know, kind of what they're about in their day-to-day life, seeing that they're really normal people just doing extraordinary things. And then donating to help pay for their resources that they provide these citizens.
Normal people doing extraordinary things. It's a great way to end the program. And all of you have really been gifted with this, a gift of compassion and commitment, and you should be commended. And on behalf of all of us in San Diego, the community, we really do appreciate it. Thanks for joining us on the program today about TIP, Trauma Intervention Program here in San Diego, with our Executive Director, Shay Gebler, and our volunteers, Cher DeWeese and Linda Lohr. And thank you for listening.